please hit like, share, and subscribe. Now enjoy the Practical Guitarist Podcast.
Good evening, Jim.
Good evening, David. I was trying to keep a straight face the whole time.
I did it on purpose for one thing, but I almost hit the start streaming button, which would have been really funny if this just popped up on my Twitch and people were watching and interacting in the chat. We actually probably should do another live episode. We haven't done one in a while. Anyway, this first segment is brought to you by no one except for ourselves. It's what's new. We're going to do what's new tonight. Some shit's happened and So Jim, why don't you start us off? Cause you got some stuff to talk about and mine hasn't materialized yet. So
sure. Well, mine haven't materialized. I ordered some things, one of which I guess a prototype exists. And the other one, a signature version exists. So, I made a pre-order. I pre-ordered the, pedal, that, what's the name of that? Company custom something. It's a pedal that is a Bigsby. So what they did
you ordered the Bigsby pedal.
Right. They partnered with Fender. Game Changer Audio, thank you.
Yeah, Game Changer.
Yep, Game Changer Audio. I ordered the Bigsby pedal. The Bigsby pedal does exist in at least prototype form, and I have a video for it, and thought it was look good. Now, here's the thing. So this is why I ordered it, and I don't know if it's going to work out, but I do know this. Because I pre-ordered it, and because I was one of the first ones, you actually can't just pre-order it. You have to email them and say, can I pre-order this pedal? And then they say, sure, and they give you a link, and that link's good for whatever, and then you can pre-order the pedal. So they're a pricey company. I mean, they're the ones that made the plasma stuff and the spring loaded. You can find this on Anderton. You can find it on Six Cycle Hum. So they created like distortion fuzz, I think. And
that a reverb. That light reverb.
Yeah. Which it does a spring. It actually has a spring. It's a spring loaded reverb.
But it uses a light sensor to actually make a reverb. Yeah.
Right, which is cool because you can do optic only, spring only, or both. And what's really cool about it is, just like a real spring reverb, I say real spring reverb, it is real spring reverb, you could bang on it, make noise, and not do anything, not play anything.
You
have plug shit into it.
I love it that you think that that's cool. Cause like,
no, I think it's cool because it's a pedal doing it. I did it with my amp 1,000 times. You know, I'd put it up, move it, it was turned on and boing, 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 but I think it's cool that a pedal will do it. But that's because the reason I think that's cool is I haven't bought one of those and used it in real life. But I thought to myself, if you step on it, it's gonna react also to your step, especially if you're a clomper like I am. I'm like a Clydesdale with those
things. That's
kind of
that's why people like the Surfy Bear reverb, because you can put it on your board and kick it.
Yep. Yep. That's another one. But that's a big one, right? That thing's like this
big. It's a full-size Accutronics tank.
A full-size tank, where this thing's only like this big.
Yeah, and I know people that mount pedals on top of those, too, so when you turn them on and off.
Right. So what they did was they partnered with Fender to make this look like a real Bigsby. So I guess Fender owns Bigsby's...
Does it look like a real Bigsby, or is it, in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's not a real Bigsby attached to some sort of piezo sensor.
Right, that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like a real Bigsby, so it looks like they bought a Bigsby, put it into a pedal, attached a pedal underneath, and then, you know, all your electronics. And it's got the spring and everything. Now, what's cool is you pull it back, it does what a Bigsby does, make your sound go down, but if you push it forward, it has a little bit of, just like you would with a floating trem, so it has a little bit of forward thing to it too. So I figured, what the heck, mine is going to be hand signed and numbered. I already got the information from Game Changer, told them I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to that. That thing is not cheap, folks. That one,
I was just going to say, that's your most expensive pedal you've ever bought.
$392. I have never spent, other than like the Helix, I've never spent that kind of money on a pedal.
Yeah, that's not really the same class of item anyway.
No, not even in the same. Now, you might ask me, why'd you get the Bigsby versus the Whammy? I guess it was two kind of things. One, I'll get to after we talk later about a different type of thing.
Let's cover it when it comes in, because I think you'll have some more commentary about how it's different. Because we both basically have already had this conversation behind the scenes, and so I sort of knew, you know, this is going to be a little bit different. Actually, the question, the only thing I had that I would like to share about this now, is really like, this is Game Changer's first digital foray into pedals, so it's going to be interesting to see how this thing actually operates and how good it sounds. Because they've never done a digital pedal.
And the timing of my reception might actually be when you're here. So you might actually be here for unboxing.
Oh, that'd be nice if I can make it out there in time. Everything keeps stacking up here.
Yeah, it's 5 to 8 weeks, so it's a long time. I look at it this way also. If I don't like it, I can clean it up, box it up, and sell it probably for more than I paid, because it will be a collector's item at some point.
Yeah, somebody's gonna be looking for those at some point, right? Yeah. So you have another what's new, right? Something else? Do you want me to do mine first?
Do yours, and then we'll go into mine, because mine's gonna be.
So I've been looking at King of Tone Alternatives. I went to Open Jam at Pollyanna Brewing in St. Charles, Illinois. And I took my, you can't see it, it's out of frame. I took my, clone of a Zen Drive, and, it sounded really good, battery powered, of course. And I just played that through the Fillmore with my new PRS, which by the way, just excelled, sounded great. Pedal sounded great. Amp sounded great. Playing was terrible. That's a whole other.
That terrible?
That's a. Oh, I yeah. Heard the oh video. Yeah. Well, no, 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 no. That is a different. That's a different thing. The audio you heard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I. There's a long story on that one. Maybe I'll share that in my gig report. I went and got a. I was looking at a couple pedals, and I was actually like trying to hold off and not buy something, but because I have. So I sold the Kiesel. Kiesel's out the door. It's on its way to Maine. It should arrive tomorrow.
I just saw it go by.
I put like $1,000 worth of gear up onto my Reverb page. And I was going to wait for stuff to sell before I started like buying things. Actually, the idea was to start getting PA equipment. So I went ahead and I was on Reverb the other night, and I saw a Golden Boy from Jackson Audio come up for $169. I think I ended up paying for it. So I got it for $40 under what it would go for used normally. And I had to pay shipping, but, you know, you got to pay shipping these days. Unfortunately, that's,
I know.
Free shipping is not a thing anymore. So I should be getting that sometime this week, probably Thursday, Friday, I would suspect. It's an interesting pedal. If you're not familiar, we talked about it on the show, I think, a couple episodes back, but. Because Jim encountered one in the wild. And what that pedal is, it's a King of Tone with a boost. Well, it's one half of a King of Tone with a boost. 3-band EQ. It has digital switching, so it allows you to do things like you can set the gain knob full up, and then you can actually tap both sides of the pedal to scroll through various gain modes. So 25%, 50%, 75%, 100%. And, of course, there's four different types of clipping, and there's four different types of boost. Built into the pedal, so you can use various functions to access those. It's all MIDI programmable as well. The only thing that I'm kicking myself in the ass about is I bought this pedal, and I'm like, yeah, I finally got another King of Tone, so I can take this to jams with me, and I don't have to like take my King of Tone off my board to be like totally happy with what I'm doing. And we'll talk about that in the gig report. But the stupid part was I didn't look to see if it took a battery. So now I have this 120 or 150 milliamp pedal, and I don't have any way to power the damn thing because I can't put a battery in it. So what am I going to do? I'm going to daisy chain it, you know, to a one spot, or put it on a one spot and then like hope that they have power at wherever I go. Or better yet, am I just going to tape a battery to it and run a little 9-volt plug in there and then just swap the battery every show, because 150 milliamps on most batteries will drain it in an hour or two.
Stuck it up pretty bad.
Yeah. which makes me wonder, since it's digital switching, how long it's going to work. I think the short-term solution will be to buy a couple lithium 9-volt batteries and then pull the power supply off my looper board, swap that for one spot in the daisy chain, because I don't use it as much as I want to, and then use that for the Golden Boy and put that on a board with maybe some other pedals I got, you know, and that's kind of the thing that I'm thinking about doing. So I've been looking at boards and stuff, but yeah, that's my what's new. There's not a whole lot else. I bought the PRS. I don't plan on buying much else until I start selling stuff. So
all right, so what else is new? Well, I pre-ordered a guitar that doesn't exist yet.
So, well, it exists. It's just not in your hands.
It exists and it doesn't exist. Right. Okay. So the guitar that I'm talking about is the new Q series. It's a Q52 from Ibanez. Now, you had called. You and your crystal ball called last year.
Look at the smug-ass look on my face right now.
Last year, it was longer than that.
It was when I got my Kiesel. I've had my Kiesel for 2 years.
2 years, okay.
And I was like, Kiesel. I'm not really sure why other companies haven't bought into this idea yet.
You literally called out Ibanez. You said, it'll be Ibanez first.
Well, yes. No, that was a year ago when I said it'll probably be Ibanez. But I was always saying it would be Ibanez or Schecter. One of those two companies, because that's their core market, is those kinds of players, is losing money hand over fist while they don't have a headless.
That's right. So Ibanez has released a Q series, Q52, Q54, something like that. And the difference is there's actually different models. It's not just different finishes. So you've got the one I ordered is matte blue. And the matte blue, and I think there's a black of this one, matte black or shiny black. The Q52 is two humbuckers, which has 10 different selections. If you look at the way that the switching
goes.
Right,
and they got their super switcher on those, like they got in the AZ line.
Yeah, right. The same thing as the AZ line. So you've got the outer single coil, inner single coil, both of the things, and then, of course, one and the other. 10 different things. Believe it or not, the HSS has two less. It's only got 8, which I thought was weird, but
it makes sense. Less coils. Less coils. Tap.
That's exactly right. And so, so you do have an HSS, and that comes in another series of colors. Then I thought, they've got an upgraded version of the HSS. Mm-hmm. That's got like a quilt top. It's prettier. But then there's another one I thought, ooh, this is a nice finish. I like this one for the humbucker. It's a good thing I looked at it harder because it was going to spend the extra money.
And it's a seven string and fan fretted.
Now, they've all got what looks like a fan fret, but it's not. It's actually an angled fretting. So they're instead of doing the fan fretting where you do this, they're angling part of the... It's a weird thing.
Above the 12th fret, they're not. Are they all doing that?
No, just above the 12th fret. They're all got a little bit of something to them. So, I impulse ordered that. I mean, I could cancel at any time. I mean, but I kind of was like, somebody asked me, they said, "Well, what do you want out of this?" I go, "I don't know. I honestly don't know, but I do know this. I'll have the first one Sweetwater ships out, because I was the first pre-order. Not that it matters. I mean, it's not going to be like a special, you know, guitar or anything, but and I know that it's going to be something that people are going to want. That these guitars, this series of guitars, is going to be something that if I decide I don't want it, I can always get my money back out of it. So I'm not gonna
honestly, wouldn't be surprised if I don't end up buying one of these at some point. I don't think they're the nicest looking things in the world, but
right.
To be totally honest, like this whole aesthetic, it's kind of growing on me the more I see them, because
yeah.
I initially thought they were like trying to be an AZ but headless, and like they're not really though. They're their own animal. They're kind of S series esque in a way. So right. I don't know. They're very unique. I know a lot of people will be looking at these and being like, gross. I don't see any that don't have the fan all the way through. So I don't know what you're talking about.
It's apparently the fan isn't as fan as
no. And that's normal. So like every manufacturer does their own. These aren't fan. They're all just slanted, which
that's
is
it. That's yeah. What it's called.
So I don't know why you exactly would do that other than to have like a progressively heavier set for maybe like some lower tunings and stuff. But normally they're fanned, not just all like this at the same rate. Right. And it may exactly. be very subtle.
Which is what these are.
Right. You know what that would be? That would be for ergonomics.
Yeah.
Not just tuning and dealing with larger string gauges. It's an ergonomic thing. So I'm interested. I'm going to play one when they come out. I definitely will.
Yeah.
I think they're cool looking guitars. Congratulations on the pre-order, by the way, because that's going to be a big thing when it comes in. Roasted maple too.
Sweet. I know. Roasted maple. The wizard neck.
I will say this. My only caveat with these is they're like $1,000, $999, and then I think the other ones are $1,100, and they're Indonesian. So you're buying $1,000 quart, which that's a hard thing for me to stomach that people buy. But people buy PRSSEs, and they're same thing. So
yeah, and it's interesting to me because and they've got these Jeskar Evo gold frets.
Yeah, that's a common thing. That's not anything new. Yeah. In fact, Kiesel's been using that for several years.
Yeah, I knew that they'd been around. They aren't stainless steel.
They're tougher than stainless, or they're tougher than stainless. They're tougher than nickel, though.
Tougher than nickel, right?
Yeah, quite a bit tougher, in fact.
Yeah, so I'm kind of stoked. I'm really stoked because I haven't played a stainless headless guitar since I played Steinberger. I played a Steinberger guitar and a bass. I didn't own the bass. And I can tell you that I was always off a couple frets because I couldn't tell where my hand was. It's very different feel, at least the Steinbergers were. It always felt like the guitar was in a different place. So I wound up higher on the neck than I thought I
would. Well, I usually have that problem more because of scale length than...
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They have a... I think because the scale length is there, but also the way that the Steinberger sat... You gotta remember, I haven't played anything like this. You've had the Kiesel. I haven't had a Kiesel. Because a friend of mine went, well, that's not nothing new. And then he showed me some young girl who was very talented, by the way, playing a Strandberg. And I'm like, I know those exist.
Everyone knows they exist.
Believe me, I know they exist. I know who Ole England is. I know those things exist.
All right, so for your purposes, looking at this guitar and the way that the neck is shaped, you're not going to have any problems because you're going to have basically what looks like a headstock contour at the end of the neck.
Yeah, that's
to make
what
that transition easier. Yep. And Robert Jackson commented in the group that it looks like these might be able to hang on a hanger. And I'm not going to be a jerk, but I'm going to say I've heard this argument from a lot of people. I won't buy a headless guitar because I can't hang it on the wall. If you're buying a freaking guitar to hang it on your wall, if that's your biggest sole concern, maybe you should think about whether you should be buying guitars. Period. 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 Yeah. So I don't think Robert was thinking that, but if you are Robert, I'm on to you. I'm watching.
No, I don't think that's why. I think he's just meaning so you have a place to put it or an easy way to put it. But it comes with a gig bag and they're really small and it looks like they're going to be light.
Honestly, you can buy, they have sideways guitar hangers just for the stuff. Like they exist. Just buy one.
Yep.
Anyway.
I look forward to it.
Yep.
I look forward to it. But so this goes into my next. Are we okay going into my next little thing?
All right.
Is it segment, goes into it?
Segment two. Gig reports. Or do you want to go on to something else?
Nope. That was segment two. Let's do this again. Segment two. This is going to be impulse buying.
Okay. We'll do impulse buys.
Impulse buys. So you've had a relative, I mean, I don't know, you've had a recently relative impulse buy or two.
I've had multiple impulse buys. I'm just throwing money out the window right now. Yeah.
So the question that I have, because this came up in one of the podcasts I was watching or listening to or whatever, and they said that the typical impulse buy, which I kind of understand, is about $200, which is why all these Firefly videos and all the other videos go off the wall, earped videos.
I wish.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was like, really? $200? I wish I had a $200 impulse buy because I'd be a lot better off. My wallet would be a lot thicker. I spent $200 on a weekend. I mean, I'm not trying to brag, but Jesus, I can't even imagine. Well, I guess I impulse buy. I mean, I go out to dinner and then go
that's
out,
not
go
really, out to lunch. It's like an impulse buy is when you go into a store and you got a list of items you want, and then you just see something that's like totally not on the list, totally out of left field, and really expensive or more expensive than you really should be spending. And you're like, you know what? I'm just doing it anyway. Treat yourself. Right. As people
treat
say.
Yourself. You know? That's the Parks and Rec for thing. Treat yourself. Treat yourself. So that was one of my favorite. Parks and Rec. I love Parks and Rec. I mean, I had those two impulse buys, and what's funny is one's a pre-order. I haven't had to pay it yet, but that bill's coming due in October. And then the other one is or thereabouts. And the other one, I already paid for it. The pedal is paid for. There's no like 50% down, 50% when they ship it. I paid for the whole thing. So, yeah, that does not, I mean, I'm not saying that's not the way of the world, okay? I'm not trying to make myself out to be some martyr or something. I'm just saying it feels weird to pay full price for something that hasn't even gone out the door yet. So it just
if you go to a mom and pop, you might put down a deposit and then they order it for you. I mean, when you're doing big box, they want the money up front, which always bothers me because I remember a time where that was not legal for you to take somebody's money without product in hand. You could take a deposit, but you couldn't take the full amount. Until you shipped it. Right. That's so, right.
Which is normal. Like, I buy Funko Pops all the time. I pre-order them all the time. Uh-huh. And those are impulse buys for me. I buy those things like I buy gum. And as a matter of fact, I just got a new AC/DC Highway to Hell sitting right up here. And I got my Devo Satisfaction.
Is it in the box?
What's weird, it's in the box. It's in the box, but the AC/DC one has to come out of the box because it hangs. I didn't know they hung. My son was like, Dad, you should take that out of the box. It hangs. I go, it hangs? He goes, yeah, they got two holes in them. Anyway, that's going to go on the wall. But the thing is that this is what made me think of that is that when you impulse buy, typically you have a little bit of time to go, maybe not, but Reverb, you impulse buy, that money is gone. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if the person didn't ship it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a certain amount of time. You might be able to call them and go, oh, I was drunk. I was a little high when I impulse bought that thing.
I honestly think that Ibanez will have your guitar ready quick. Game Changer might run behind. And the reason I say Ibanez will have that guitar ready quick is because I suspect these have been going on the assembly line since last year.
And
they were supposed to be a winter NAMM launch because the bass came out at summer NAMM last year.
And the guy, they did release the, what's the player's name?
I forget his name. Ichi?
Yeah, Ichi.
Yeah,
whatever. I don't know how to pronounce it because I'm terrible with
names. I'm not familiar with him. He was actually really surprising to see that guy get a top build like new series guitar, but he's an incredible player. I watched some of the clips and stuff of him after, you know, was announced. I was like, yeah, all right, makes sense, sounds legit.
Yeah, I was blown away by this kid. But so I guess our question to you guys is these impulse buys, do you really want to? So I bought the guitar with a lot of front end knowledge about guitars, number one, and number two, the knowledge that if I don't like it, I can A, send it back to Sweetwater
about shipping. Or sell it.
Or sell it. You know, so I'm not really out anything. I'm not really taking that much of a chance. Say with this pedal. But you get an irked guitar. And this is the thing that I see online a lot. You get an irked guitar or Firefly. You look up on Reverb, they're like $400. I'd be like, fuck you. I'm not giving you $400 for that thing. You'd pay $400. And even if you did, that's your problem, not mine.
Yeah.
That is a budget guitar for a reason. And I don't care if you put, we've had this discussion before, I don't care if you put Seymour Duncans in it or DiMarzios in it. I don't give a shit. Take them out.
It's still plywood.
Yeah, take them out. I'll put my own damn pickups in them. Put the originals back in. You're the one that wanted those DiMarzios, not me.
You know, I like, so let's stop for a second. So let's talk about this for just a brief second. So the cost of the guitar, right? Like, electronics are like $300 total if you were to buy them off the shelf, which the manufacturers don't, and put together your own wiring kit for guitar, your own wiring harness. Pickups are about $100 a piece. The you know, your controls are going to be
wiring
about
harness
$7 or $8 a piece, and then your wiring is going to be, you know, $1 worth of wire in there.
The jack,
and then the jack is going to cost you $10, and the, you know, so like all told, you're looking at $300.
Yeah.
When you buy a ERT or Firefly or whatever, they're probably spending $100 in wood, and maybe it might even be, because I think that's where they're getting away cheap. I don't think they're getting away cheap on the electronics, which the electronics still sound like trash. Because so they're trying to get away cheap with the electronics, but even then you still have to have copper, you still and that stuff costs money, and you have to have somebody actually make that for you. They're not winding their own pickups. They're going to Epiphone or whoever is running their factory at night, you know, to make pickups for these smaller companies. And they're getting pickups there. And then those are going into these guitars. So the reality is this. This is why I made the comment I did. When you buy a $200 guitar on whatever Amazon, and then you try to sell $400 for it because you upgrade the electronics, stop for a minute. Because the reality is you're still selling like $75 worth of wood. I mean, that's really what you're selling. And then $200 worth of electronics. Two pickups, you know.
Yeah. And that's why I don't understand the logic behind this pricing, this used pricing. Because it doesn't matter that you put in, you personally. You're better off. And this, I can't tell you how many people I've heard say this. You're better off if you bought those pickups, pull them out.
Yeah.
Sell them separately.
Sell them separately.
You will get your money back that way. You're not getting it back that way putting them in an ear. That's like attaching gold to a turd and asking for more money for a turd.
And everybody knows it's a turd. The only people that don't know it's a turd are the
gold.
The only people that don't know it's a turd are the ones who don't know any better. And there's a lot of people who don't know any better, which is why there are hundreds of these guitars on Reverb. So I'm particularly picking on Firefly. There was a video done by someone. I'm not going to call names out. I've done it enough on this show. They don't care who I am. I don't care who they are, obviously, because I'll call people out if I want to. But in reality, this person did a review of a Firefly and then said in their review that this guitar's ready for the stage.
Yeah.
And I cackled. I didn't even think it was like, I didn't even look at it seriously. I looked at it and laughed because I'm like, there's no effing way you would catch me going on stage with that particular guitar. A court? Maybe.
All right.
That's you and I both, not a chance in hell.
We both watched the same video. And this is why I thought that was an odd off-the-cuff statement. Because that person began with
you know there's an affiliate link at the bottom of that video.
Yeah, I know.
And that's basically, if I haven't spilled the beans for our listeners yet, when you watch a video with a cheap guitar, what's always at the bottom? The affiliate link.
That's right. That's right. And they get a few dollars for those sales.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the Amazon links where we get like pennies. It's
this ain't rocket science. I'm not blowing the whistle on anybody or anything. If you didn't know this already, you probably weren't paying attention. I know I wasn't for a while because I was trying to figure out what's the grift here, you know. But I knew there was a grift. You know what I mean?
Like, but all that said, this is the thing that took me aback with that. The person said that the pickups didn't sound that good. That they were microphonic. Okay.
But I'm going to take it on stage.
Pulled the electronics out and said, well, this cavity isn't protected. You know, went across, blah, blah, blah. I would recommend you shield the cavity. I would recommend you, you know, with the pickup covers
on. All right. Let's just cut off. I don't want to go down that. I don't want to go down that whole rabbit hole. But I do have one thing to comment on what you just said. The shielding thing? That's complete nonsense. Shielding helps. I'm not going to tell you not to shield your guitars. That's a great idea to do. But there are $2,000 guitars that get sold every day that don't have a lick of shielding paint in them.
I think I have some.
I know you do.
All I'm saying is, though, I don't want to go down. That's not the rabbit hole I'm going down. After the nitpicked all this stuff, okay, then at the end of the video said, yeah, I would use this as a backup guitar. Why? My question would be, if it's not...
Because it's going to sell his affiliate link.
Right. If it's not ready, yeah, I may as well use the pronoun. If it's not going to be good enough to be your primary guitar, what makes it good enough to be your secondary guitar? That's the thing I don't get. I mean, unless you've got a tech who's there changing your strings... and we'll talk about that.
I think we're getting there.
The bonus content with my gig report. Then you're not going to take that guitar to a gig. That's ridiculous. That's malarkey. So I get it. If you want to buy, I get the fact that because I've almost gone down this rabbit hole almost weekly. I look at a guitar that pops up on my Amazon thing, and I go, you know what? I could probably throw some nice pickups in that and make it. Then damn. I go to myself, why?
No.
That's exactly what I go. I go, why? Why would I do? That's exactly what I go. Why would I do that? What am I going to get? Let's say it's a $270 guitar, a $300 guitar.
In your case, you already have five additional instruments behind you.
I know.
So what the hell? What are you? Oh, I gotta have one more. No, you don't.
No, I don't. I don't need all these.
Don't become a collector. Stop it.
I don't need all these. I'm already collector. I have one extra Les Paul. I mean, come on. It's kind of right there. And the SG that's in his bag out there. That's how many guitars I have. I forget to take them out of their bag because I'm like, okay, that one's for rehearsing and that one's for rehearsing. And then crap.
The fact that you have purposes for them is like mind-boggling to me. This one goes to open mic, you know, like.
Yeah, I do. And it's weird. It's strange, isn't it? Okay, this one goes to that open mic, but that one goes to that open mic. This one goes over.
What the hell?
This is the one I take to lessons. And this is the. And I got a friend of mine who goes the same thing. He goes, why don't I go, well, they're all 25 and a half inch scale or 24 and three quarter inch scale, whatever Les Paul is. The Strat is 25 and a half inch, right? But, the point I'm making here is this. I get that you would want to do that. If you're a person that really wants to buy a lot of guitars and wants to have that project guitar, because that's what some people like to do. They tinker. That's cool. But don't then try to sell your tinker off like you're the tinker extraordinaire, because nobody gives a shit about what you like for tone.
Right, right. All right, so it's time for us to switch gears. We've done this one to death.
Segment.
So do we want to do... we can talk about our gig reports, or we can talk about the new Fenders. Choose your own adventure.
Let's talk about the new Fenders. Let's do the Fenders.
Let's do Fenders first. Let's let a Gibson or a Fender? The lamest joke ever.
First a Gibson, then a Fender.
Yeah.
First a Fender?
Okay. So the new Fenders, I got the web page up over here. I actually want to pull it up because I hadn't looked at these yet. I knew the new ones came out, but I just didn't care. So the Corey Wong Strat, right? If you're not familiar with Corey Wong and Wolfpack, I highly recommend you check that band out. He's deserving of a signature instrument. But the funny part is he plays like a Mexican standard Strat or something.
They put together a $2,000.
Yeah, it's not anything special, really. But here you go. There's this guy. And then there's all these paranormal cyclone, paranormal supersonic, paranormal tornado. And these are all Squires, by the way. Paranormal offset Telecaster, paranormal baritone Carbonita Telecaster, which some people are going to eat that thing up.
Before you go too far, I just want to say this about the Corey Wong Strat. I think they had extra ultra parts and they wanted to sell it because it's literally got an ultra neck. It even says American ultra neck profile and body contours.
Yeah.
I think they had extra ultra parts and they wanted to sell them.
Or Corey Wong preferred the ultra to his Mexican standard, which is a possibility. Dude can play. Like, let's just be real.
Yeah.
Anyway, Paranormal Carbonita Telecaster Thin Line. J-Mascus Telecaster, which is actually interesting. That's a blue sparkle, man. But he's not a guy that's like immediately identified with Telecasters for sure. So now most of these guitars have been Squires. That was a Fender. The J-Mascus was a Fender, and so was the Corey Wong. Then there's the return of the Kurt Cobain Jagstang, and it is not a Squire this time around. It is a Fender, and it is pricey. It's $1,249. Not super pricey. I'm surprised they went this level with it, and we'll talk about that because that's one of the most sought after guitars that they've ever done, and they made a ton of them, and they go for like four times what they did new, used. So of the last 20 years or 30 years, it's probably like the most desirable Squire for sure. I would say even more so one of the most, one of the few guitars in the last 30 years that has like quadrupled in value.
You'll see a lot of people buy both the left and right handed versions just for collecting.
Yeah.
Just for collecting.
So, all right. I could give two shits about the Kurt Cobain Jagstang.
Yeah, me too.
Are they doing a new Affinities series?
Yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, there's a whole new Affinity series. They've made some improvements.
Did they finally make the bridge the same as the on the Telecaster, the same as the others?
Yeah.
It's still an Affinity bridge. Yeah.
Well, no, it's. It's a I thought you meant did they make it where it was not a three thing.
No. It's been like that for a while, but the problem is that bridge doesn't have a screw hole compliant with an American bridge, so you can't throw an American bridge on there. And it's not just metric, it's literally like different dimensions. It's kind of weird. Affinity is affinity. It's still Affinity. They changed the finishes. They changed the woods. I mean, that's basically because they needed to go over to Indian Laurel instead of whatever they were using. I think they were using Jatoba or something before for the fretboard.
Yep.
They do have two new pedals, the dual Marine layer reverb and then the dual Pugilist distortion.
Yeah,
big deal. Yep. I mean, I'm not really into their pedals. I will say this. They did come out with a Tone Master Super Reverb, Jim.
I know. I saw that. Tone Master Super Reverb. That's new.
What is the effing point? Once you go to four speakers, the damn thing's going to be so heavy anyway.
You got me by the short hairs on this one. I cannot understand. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it. I mean, so the Tone Master Super Reverb, for those who don't know, that's a 410, right?
Yeah.
That's a 410. I'm looking at it now. So it's a 410 Jensen speakers. That's still going to weigh a ton.
It's now, 36 pounds. 36 pounds. Yeah. My Fillmore is still heavier than this, which tells you the cabinet quality on this is shit. That's what that tells me. Because this thing's still
got barely
transformers on it. There's no way. Yeah.
That's like, barely any more than this one has. And this one weighs 34 or 35 pounds.
Now, cabinet and kickstands. And kickstands. Those kickstands aren't light. They weigh about 3 pounds a piece.
Yeah.
So maybe they've chintzed out on those too because the cabinet weighs less.
Super lightweight aluminum. I don't know.
I can't imagine the chassis is more of the weight than the cabinet with speakers. I can't imagine that. So I don't know what kind of technical trickery is involved here, but 36 pounds, hats off to you, Fender. I have no idea how you pulled that off. But if you crapped out on the cabinet, this is worthless. Because that's part of what makes those old Fender amps so great. Is the pine
cabinet. The cabinet cabinets. And the 410s. Yep.
All right, so let's talk about guitars. Paranormal, Squire series. Who cares? Who cares? This is another series that will live on in somebody's mind, and in 20 years they'll be nostalgic for it. But the reality is these are not gonna sell super well. Maybe with specific crowds like the church crowd, but these are really kiddish versions of guitars that already exist. Which is why I'm looking at them and I'm like, they look very bubbly. Specifically the Paranormal, Supersonic, and Cyclone. They look very bubbly. They don't look... There's something about them that the headstocks are too big, or... I don't know. They don't look like the originals did to me. Maybe I'm just an idiot and I don't remember what the originals look like.
I don't know. I know that 60 Cycle Hum showed some of these, a couple of these.
I actually sort of like the Paranormal Offset Telecaster.
Yeah. That one's kind of funky looking.
Yeah, and I wish it did it in more colors than this, though.
Yep.
I mean, I don't mind the shell pink, but I wish there was like an orange or something.
Yep. I like the look of the blue Cabernet thin line, but I don't have a P90 guitar, so.
You're just obsessed with thin line Telecasters. You've been talking about it for years.
I'll never find the one that got away, so to speak. That's what's going to happen.
I just laugh because I'm like, I've never been a big fan of the thin lines. I'm just not. I played a bunch of them over the years. I played one that was supposedly really good when I was in college, and I was like, I just kind of rolled my eyes. I was like, okay. You keep telling yourself that's good. I'll play my Strat over here. So
tell me what the deal of this Screamadelica?
It's probably just some custom art from Primal Scream's 1991 breakthrough album Screamadelica featured a fresh blend of indie rock songwriting. Why have I never heard of this band before?
That's what I was just going to say. Who's that?
And why did they commemorate it with graphics from them?
Don't know.
I mean, honestly, this is as dumb as PRS doing the cover of that King Crimson album.
Oh, the King Crimson
album. And I'm a King Crimson fan. I'm like one of the biggest King Crimson fans you're going to find. And that was like, huh, that's weird. That seems weird to me.
I hate to say it, and I'm not familiar with the band. I'm not familiar with the album. So there might be people, obviously, like the screaming in the comment section of, oh, man, you never heard of these guys. This is the best thing since sliced bread. But it kind of looks like a box of cereal, like a Tide. It looks like Tide, like a Tide pod went off.
I know where this came from.
What?
Have you ever seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure?
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Looks like something from that. It really does. It looks like something in the the Rube Goldberg, the machine at the beginning.
Yep.
I'm not even going to try to say that name again because it was awful. But yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Like I said, it looks like a Tide pod exploded. I don't know. I guess it's cool. It's different.
I think this is better than their last launch, though, where they did the Fenders with the painted headstocks that didn't really even fit the guitars.
And an upcharge, because they're the Ultra Lux instead of just the Ultra. They're the Ultra Lux.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't see a single one of those in person or online that I thought would look good.
There's nothing here that I'm like, oh, I'm excited. I really want to try this. But I just they're not hitting my target market. Maybe the Corey Wong strata would be interesting. I'd like to check that out. Interesting. I'm looking to see. Oh, he's got a D neck profile on there. Yuck. Like, never mind. I forgot. Nope. Not going to happen. D necks and me do not get along. Yeah. So I think it's time for us to switch topics. We can talk about. We should probably talk about Gig Report because we have maintenance as one of the topics. But
Gig Report,
let me do mine first because you got your segue at the end. So I've been playing out a little bit more. Some things are happening. I'm actually meeting with people who might be forming a band with me as well, which is like a whole other thing, and that would be a totally pure, selfless soul project for myself. Which I'm really hoping pans out, and I'm going to continue to beat the war drum to see where that goes. I can tell the bass player that I'm working with seems to be very excited. He's been texting me during the show, actually. So I went to Open Jam at Pollyanna in St. Charles, Illinois, and I played Open Jam there. I took my PRS with me, and I played through the Fillmore 50, and I had my... Zen Drive clone. I don't know why I can't remember the name of the pedal that it cloned. I keep saying it's like an Ion Overdrive or something like that. It's a Zen Drive clone. Anyway, it's a good pedal. I really enjoyed playing through it. But I will say this. I was looking for the King of Tones thing. And like, so the reason why is I actually played another gig on Thursday. Last week, and I brought my whole board, had my whole rig, you know, Fillmore 50, Captor X into the PA, my guitar was the S500 because the PRS was in the shop. I basically had the clean channel set with some scooped out bass and like as close as I could get to sound like a Marshall, right? And I cut through that mix like a hot knife through butter. And when I kicked on that King of Tone, it was like instant, like raunchy, like every instant, like raunchy, freaking distorted guitar part you heard in the 70s, like on top of, you know, whatever, Grateful Dead or, you know, that kind of music, that time period of music. And it was just like, it was visceral. I felt it. I was playing it. I was like, I went to the moon over my tone. I was like, all right, let her rip. And every time I could, I was like, let's hit the distortion. Let's do it. Like, let's go. And I had the yellow channel. So like the King of Tone is two channels. So the right channel is my distortion channel. I use that for a little bit more gain. I actually didn't have the gain boost on it real hard. But I had the other side was more of a clean thing. It just loud, right? To punish the amp. And I left that on pretty much the whole time and used my volume knob to control volume. And then when I would go in for solo, roll the volume knob up, hit the overdrive on. And I just, like, I was over the moon. I sounded like great the entire time I was there. I had the best tone of anybody in the band. I'm not even afraid to admit that. I was loud and present. You could hear me in everything I was doing to the point where I was kind of like, damn, I'm really out front in the focus. But when you're playing with this band, it's kind of like, well, I'm probably the best guy here. I don't know. Not in that way, but like I can be the focus. I can take some of the glory, I guess. And so I was totally okay with just like stepping out and doing that. And it works really well in that band. And I laugh because I sort of think it was like, for the rest of the guys, like, we didn't know we could rock that hard. Like when we got done, it was like, damn, we got distortion now. So the tunes we played, like we played a lot of, you know, Chris Old Stumpy does a lot of the ones, but we started out, and this is the other thing I wanted to share about Gig Report. We started out and we were like 10 minutes late getting started, which is pretty much, you know, we're on time for this band. And this is how this band rolls, right? So we're like standing there, and it's me and Kyle, the singer, and his brother, the drummer. And he's like, we're going to do, yeah, I forget what the chords were, but he's like, I think it was like D, C, and G. So do you know what chords that song is? Based on D, C, and G? Yeah, okay. All right.
Yeah,
so
about every Southern rock country song that I've ever heard. Yeah.
Right. So he's like, he starts playing these chords, and I just kind of embellish a little, right? And then he keeps playing, and I'm embellishing some more. And then sooner or later, like, the bass player comes up out of nowhere, like, literally walks out of the bushes, you know, picks up his bass and starts playing. And then the youth player also comes up, and he starts playing, you know. And it's just like they're just like appearing out of the mist.
That's cool.
And before it's over with, we're jamming like, you know, Can't You See? And got the whole vocal thing going, and I'm just going buck wild. And like every solo section is just going to the moon, you know, we're taking off into orbit. And I'm just standing there going, how the hell did this happen? We were just trying to like get everybody to come over here. And we got done with the song. It was not even our set list. We've never played that song together. And we got done with the set list, and the singer looks over and he goes, we need to do that one more. And I'm like, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it sounded like you had it planned. I mean, really sounded like it was a lot of fun.
It was really fun. And then the funny part was like we did that, and then we played our normal opener, which is the name of the song. It's a Temptation song, which you heard it in the clips I sang it, but it was the one Temptation song we did. I don't remember what the name of the song is.
I remember because I said to you,
to see one of the Rolling Stones. Well, the Rolling Stones did like a whole record of Temptations covers damn near.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we played that, and then we played Bertha from Grateful Dead, and we played a bunch of stuff. But the highlight was probably. We played the theme song to the TV show, the kids' TV show, Arthur. And so they eliminate one of the chords that's in the song, which is like a whole other thing. There's only three chords in the song, and they don't play one of the chords. So they just do it with vocals, like they outline it. It's weird. So we played that, and like I could tell they were wanting to get weird with it. So right. Now imagine I'm in a band where I've been told just play clean, right? This is how this all started. Just play clean. It's fine. You can just play clean. So I'm over here and I've got both sides of the King of Tone on. I have my fuzz going. I have the wah going. I have a rotary speaker effect. And this is the best part, also my Univibe at the same time. And I'm just going ham, and I got my reverb, and I'm actually holding down the reverb so it's trailing, and it's just like a freeze effect, and I'm playing the solo on top of it. And it was hysterical, because they were all like, what the hell? And when it was over, it was kind of like, we got through like 3 or 4 songs, and I was like, just stay on the train, because I was like, we're going to the moon. I was way over the top, and I was like, dude, we're gonna kill this gig, and I got this. Like, just get on and stay on the back of the train. It's fine. And that's how the whole gig went. It was just like that. We were all seamless. We were all lockstep. And you know what the best part is? We didn't rehearse. We have not had a rehearsal since April, May. So, I mean, I don't, like, one of our band members moved to Urbana, so I don't even see him anymore. You know, it's like, it was just all locked up, and it wound up being really, really cool. So, anyway, that's my gigs for the last 2 weeks. I got one more gig with this band in, we're going to be playing Taste of Roselle in Roselle, Illinois, I think on 27th or something. And I am going to slaughter that gig the same way I did this one. I will show up. I will probably actually bring a second cabinet just because I want to be loud and in charge. And and it's going to be fun. So if you're in the area and you can go to that, you should, because I'm going to crush my enemies and see them turn before me and hear the lamentations of the women, as Conan would say. So anyway, I think it's your turn, Jim. I think you got some gig stuff to talk about.
Yep. So I got it. I was at a karaoke with a friend, and I got up and sang, and I was talking to this guy, and he goes, "Hey, you want to join my band?" And I was like, "Yeah, whatever, sure." I didn't have high expectations, not because he's not a good singer.
You always say yes. He's a really good singer. You don't know what it's going to lead to.
I get there. We're rehearsing in a barn that's as big as my house. One big open, like, real rehearsal space with, like, a true PA and a whole stage setup. Lights, everything. I'm like, and then the guy comes in and goes, "Hey, Jim, how's it going?" Hey. The other guitar player is playing an R9 Les Paul.
Good for him.
Through an R9, like, but back when they started making R9s, this is like an old one. And he has a real 60s Les Paul, and he has a real 60s Strat, real.
And he's got the bills to go with it.
And he, no. His dad was a rock solid Southern rock guitar player.
Okay, so he just inherited them all.
Yeah, that played with all these big names. So his dad, passed away, unfortunately, and left him a bunch of stuff. He pulled out an Explorer that was hand-built for him by the same, the company, you know, that a lot of people don't know this, but the guy from 38 Special, that Explorer he had was not made by Gibson.
Ghost built.
Fake. Yeah. That's the same thing with this one. It's a ghost built Explorer. He showed me. I was like, "Oh my God, this thing weighed a ton." He goes, "Yeah, it was made from a tree that his father had, cut down. And then here's the wood. I want you to make this guitar out of it." So, so I'm like, and he's got a real 80s Marshall stack and another one. And I go, "Oh my God, I'm out of my league. I'm over here with..." I had brought my katana.
Talk about, like, bringing a knife to a gunfight.
When I asked the lead singer, he's like, "Oh, just bring whatever you got, you know." And I'm like, "Ah, oh, just bring my katana." I'm like, "Oh shit!" I'm like, so one rehearsal. The audition turned into rehearsal. Went till 11 something night, almost midnight. They're like, "Okay, be ready. Friday night, we got a gig." "Oh, okay. I have just learned like 30 songs. We got a gig Friday." So Friday I show up. We do the gig. I bring in my Marshall, not to be outdone. I'm like, "All right, well, at least I got my Marshall. Bring my Marshall with me." Got my Torpedo Cap Tracks. Because we're going direct on the board. So put the capture X up there. I don't have to hook up the speaker. I did. Just so I had some stage volume a little bit. He brings in his stuff. Joe, the other guitar player, brings in his R9 and his backup R8. And he's got a Germino. Yes.
Germino.
Yeah. Head. Okay, and a thing called a brown box, and I thought that it was a DI. He goes, no, we're micing my cabinet. I go, "Well, what's that?" He goes, "Oh, this is a power conditioner to make sure I have exactly 100 and whatever."
Yeah, a lot of people use this Variac type transformer devices just to make sure you're getting proper power from the wall.
Yep, and another thing given to him from his dad. I mean, but these guys buy the stuff that's good. I mean, the bass player's playing through a Mark bass with a PV Cirrus. which anybody who knows the PV line, Theorist was,
yeah, it is a good basis, yeah,
top of the line of their stuff. And he's playing a five string. But man, I saw Grace Potter, her bass player was playing a Squire. So I'm not really,
yeah,
I think bass guys just, well, if you can thump, you're good enough.
How'd the gig go?
So yeah, so I meet the drummer for the first time at the gig. We just rehearsed without the drummer. Meet the drummer for the first time at the gig. Hey, how you doing, Joe? You know, set up. So we got two guys named Joe. What? Jim, Tim, Joe, and Gary. So Gary has no problem. Anybody not him? Get set up. The sound man gets going. We're rocking out. My B string goes fourth song. Snap. There goes my B string on my Amber Les Paul.
And did you have a backup in the trunk?
And I wonder what my backup was. Guess what it wasn't? A Firefly. Pull out my other Les Paul and do the gig. And I brought my toolkit and I go to change my strings. Here's something you shouldn't do other than dressing in the dark, changing your strings in the dark. Because I had a D string where my B string went gone. Pull that. A wound B string is not where I wanted to be. So, yeah.
How'd that go for you? How'd that go for you? You played on the secondary Les Paul all night, I'm sure.
That's what happened. So I have added this
to my equipment.
My kit, which I have right here because I was changing my strings from I was able to salvage that string because I didn't tighten it down. I felt it. I went, wait a minute, this thing's wet. Oh, shit. So I just put it in a case.
I can honestly say I've never done that. I have accidentally put non-wound strings on the wrong ones. Yeah. I remember playing through a show where my B was going boing the whole time, and then I realized later that I put on an E in place of the B.
That's happened to me many times. So when I put it on, I went, like I said, I was like, wait a minute, this is crap. So it didn't even get around the peg, really. I pulled it around, then I went, oh, crap, pulled it right back off. So I just laid the strings, literally laid them long ways onto my back seat. I just left them
there. I mean, I honestly wouldn't even have bothered to try and change it at the gig itself. I just would have said,
I shouldn't have.
Foul with it.
I shouldn't have. But, you know, Pearl came through. Who doesn't love Pearl? So at the end of the gig, just to give you guys an update, at the end of the gig, this band, I mean, they rigged lights up in the rafters. There was a huge banner behind. I'm like, I had no idea I was joining a band that had like a real vision and everything else. You know, monitors everywhere, in-ears. I mean,
I can play on stage and people actually care.
I know. And and we had a professional, a young lady who sings at one of the local theme parks and does a thing. She's like really high end, really. She sang with us, and when we did a couple songs with her, and she and a bunch of other people, the lead singer, the guy that I met at the karaoke bar, mm-hmm. all things. How you picked up a guitar player at a karaoke bar, I don't know, but he said to me, he goes, Jim, I got three pieces of report from people that saw you tonight. He goes, number one, you bring an energy that this band didn't have. He goes, number two, everybody loved your harmonies. Your harmony vocals were incredible. And number three, everybody said, don't you dare lose this guy. So there you go. That's with high praise. And to have the other guitar player, when he nodded me in for a solo, I'm like,
you're like, wait a minute, you're gonna let me play? Like,
I can't even believe you want to hear me at all. He actually had me. He was like, Jim, you know the intro to this? I go, yeah. He goes, all right, go take it in. And then, you know, there was some Tom Petty, there was some Southern Rock, and this guy's a shit hot Southern Rock player. I mean, he grew up. His dad was, you know, Southern Rock guy, and he's a Southern Rock guy. And so he was like, you know, you kind of know this, you know, Myers world better than I do. And it was really cool to have us play off each other, and we did a little harmony thing. I had a lot of fun.
Sounds like a good situation you're getting into.
Yeah, very excited to continue it.
All right. Is it time for us to switch gears?
Yep.
Let's talk about maintenance, that thing that you neglected at that last gig.
Yes. So now that so this is our final segment of this recording. All right, so one of the things I learned was, hey, stupid, you're supposed to change your strings periodically.
Yeah, you should
change
them between every major gig. I mean, if it's like going to be a 3-hour set and you're going to be sweating balls, yeah, change your strings.
Yep. Yep. Especially like we were exposed to the outside, really humid. Everybody knows the heat waves that's going on. I mean, you can't see what the temperature is in here, but it's 73 in here. And I've got 47% humidity, which is good. So I try to keep it between 40 and 60 in here, close to 50 as possible. The thing that I wasn't doing was changing my strings much because I've really not been playing out, and so I got lazy. I mean, I'm playing in a nice air conditioned environment. Pick up my guitar, I play, I wipe it down. I've got a little Music Nomad thing. You can see it right there, that little blue thing right there at the end of my finger. I wipe it up and down on the strings, and then I have a little rag that's in there, and I clean that. And that's my regular daily string maintenance. So every one of these guitars, I mean, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guitars that get played every single day, every day. So that's I don't have guitars that don't get played every day for the most part. I mean, the bass might get played 2 or 3 times a week.
Right.
And the SG actually gets, that's in the house. That's the one that gets played when I'm in the house. So all my guitars get played. And but now I've got to say, okay, these are going to be, I mean, my number one gigging guitars are going to have to stay my number one gigging guitars, which means I've got to treat them like I'm gigging with them. That means, like you said, string changes. I've got to check the electronics, make sure they're cleaned out. I've got to, you know, so the pots don't get scratchy.
Yeah.
I've got to be the one that is checking the intonation. Okay. Your intonation is good. Yeah. How's your neck relief look? You know, so on and so forth. Go ahead.
When you get to where, okay, let's back up. Let's make a list of the things that we all should be doing as part of our regular intonation. Changing strings, dealing with any dust in your pots. So like if you turn a knob and it crackles, you should probably deal with that. Anything that's rusty, if you have strap pins that are falling out of the guitar, don't sit in properly, you should be addressing that problem. Which means either doing it yourself, taking it somewhere. Contact cleaner is a must for anything that, you know, requires manual contact. So, the other
lubricant.
Thing, finish care. Well, yeah, lubricant as well for nuts and things like that.
Yep.
Finish care.
Yep.
But a lot of people don't think about this, but if you have nitro finishes on your guitars and you want to keep them looking decent, which a lot of people don't, but if you want to keep them looking decent, wipe your guitar off after you play. I was told specifically that PRS guitars need that because the new nitro is apparently susceptible to skin oil and stuff like that in the same ways that old nitro was. And basically that's it. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like your setup and stuff, you should be doing that quarterly anyway. I ran into a problem with my gigs, the last gig, the true gig, you know, the one I got paid for, the last one that I got paid for. I went to go rehearse that morning and my neck had shifted like it had, you know, got a back bow or whatever overnight. And I was actually fretting out I was choking out from the third fret on up.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
So I was like, oh, shit. And I got the truss right out and I was freaking out because I'm like, I don't know if this is even going to be fixable. And my PRS is in the shop. So I have other guitars. I was like, I could get the Godin and I could go with that and be totally fine. So what I ended up doing is I did a quarter turn on the truss rod, and basically the neck was fine, and that's how I got to the gig. That's the kind of stuff like you need to watch for. I would not advocate, if you're gigging regularly, don't do your own maintenance. Take it to somebody else, get a second opinion, have them look it over. There's value in doing that, because they will look for things that you might not necessarily pay attention to. The other thing is, if you're in like Jim's case, where you've got five guitars you got to maintain, or six guitars you got to maintain on a daily basis, it can get overwhelming, especially if you're learning new tunes, and if you're gigging in multiple outfits, and or doing, you know, it just that like we all get busy, right? And you got to keep up with this stuff. That's why I've actually advocated, don't buy so damn many guitars, because it's harder to maintain. It just costs you more money.
Right.
And setups aren't necessarily cheap. They're $50 to $75, depending on where you go. And I just try to do mine twice a year. So I do them in the spring, and I do them in the winter.
Yep, same here.
Because the biggest changes, and like you can do them at home if you want, but I take them to get them set up. And then I tweak the neck when I get home, because for whatever reason, doesn't matter what they do, when I take them home, I have to tweak the neck. It always moves. And it's just because my environment's different than theirs. So that's where I'm at. Now you mentioned the polishing cloth. I have these wonderful Music Nomad polishing cloths, and this has, it's dual sided. So it's kind of cool. I've been using this, and I'm actually really happy with it. Ultra plush microfiber for body and neck, and then it has a low pile suede microfiber for string on the back.
Yep.
So basically you use the back side for wiping off your strings, the front side for wiping down your guitar. When you get done, throw it in the gig bag, take it home, then you can clean it off with some Dunlop 65. This stuff. Polish and cleaner.
Yep.
And it looks great. One thing that I had a conversation about somebody the other day was a string cleaner. So I actually talked to two people. One person says they don't believe in string cleaner, which I didn't ask why, but I sort of inferred why, because I know the person pretty well. And basically what they were saying is you should be changing your strings enough that cleaning them is not going to make a damn bit of difference. Yep. And I agree. I think he's sort of right. But at the same time, the strings I use they're $12 a pack. When I play outdoors, they get nasty fast. You might as well wipe them off with an alcohol wipe, and then wipe them down with this guy and throw it in your bag when you have those kind of situations. Because the only enemy of your guitar strings is your body's fluids, your acid in your sweat and stuff. So take care of your guitars.
I'll do a separate video. I have a bag that's a toolkit that I bring to and from gigs. It's got strings and clippers and all kinds of stuff.
I have all the tools. I told myself I was going to put all the tools in a bag. I normally have
this in there. It pissed me off that this wasn't in there, because I was looking for it. And believe me, a phone is not a replacement for this. But so a friend of mine brought his Strat over to me this weekend to set up, take a look at. So, and obviously I have to know how to do my own guitars. So I take my guitars in periodically to get them set up. Like yourself, I want a second opinion, but I have to do a lot of maintenance myself because I have a few guitars. It can get expensive. It can get costly. So anyway, he brought me a Strat. Now, a Strat is before the Ultras. They were Deluxe or something like that.
Yeah, the real expensive ones before that, right?
All right. So he brings me over this Strat, and he had paid a good amount of money for it, used, before the market exploded, because this same guitar would have gone for, right now, like $1,600, $1,800. Mm-hmm. But it was right before the glut.
Yeah, when they were like 50, like 1,500 or something back then, yeah.
Yeah, so he paid only like 12. So, and this thing was in top-notch shape. I mean, he treats his guitars like dog shit, which I, you know, whatever. So he brings it over to me. He goes, "Hey, Jim, can you take a look at it? I know you." So he brings it over, and he goes, "I can't keep the G-string in tune." Now, this is a Strat. The bridge, now, here's the body.
Yeah, because he put bigger strings on it. And never ratcheted down the tremolo claw.
I said, "Did you?" "No, here's what's funnier. Did you change these strings?" He goes, "I think I did." I said, "Okay, let me..." So I'm taking the strings out. Now, you're going to laugh. So the guy that owned it before him was kind of like the story of my DC. Mm-hmm. He bought it, polished it up, played it for a few minutes, put it in a case, and put it away.
Right.
But it was a guy, I know his brother-in-law personally, this guy with more money than brains. So he had, you know, who else buys a, you know, almost $2,000 guitar and puts it in a bag and leaves it for 15 years or whatever it was? So I take the guitar and I pull the thing out. Now, does anybody remember Fender bullets, the strings, the Fender bullets?
There was one stuck in there.
So let me, no worse. Do you remember what the end of the bullets looked like?
Yeah,
it was a bullet, right? Okay. I pull the G string out. It's a Fender bullet.
Okay.
I said to him, I go, "Do you know what this? You know what this is? I've actually got it right here in the trash. So you know what this is?" He goes, "No." I go, "This is the original string. This string is older than your dog."
Yeah. You can still buy Fender bullets too, so it could be a replacement set. But not likely.
Oh no, he didn't. Let me just tell you, this guy didn't buy Fender bullets. Mm. He's an Ernie Ball guy. So he brought me over a pack of strings. He goes, I go, "Well, what strings do you want on here?" He goes, "Well, I don't know, nines, tens." I go, "Okay." I go, that matters. And I said to him, "What brand?" And he goes, "I don't know. Just pick a brand." He goes, "I got a box of strings here." He goes, "A box of strings." Is this what's going to happen when I open my shop? Because I'm going to open a shop, do repairs. So I'm buying a bunch of stuff. The nut files are pretty expensive. Those are coming in soon. So this is like $200-something for a set of nut files. The full set.
Oh, I
know.
Like
300, but they're diamond crusted, and supposedly you will only buy them once. It's that, what is it? Cry once, buy once, or something like that. But anyway, so I'm sitting there with this thing, and I get the, he's like, and the bridge lifts even worse, and I go, "What kind of strings were on here?" He goes, "I don't know." And I go, so I loosen them all up. I get the thing. I go, "How do you like your bridge to?" He goes, "Oh, I never use a whammy bar." "Okay, so you just want your bridge to be, you want me to deck it?" He goes, "Deck it." I go, "Yeah, deck it. You know what? Do you want me to make it flat?" He's sitting right here. This is where I did the work. I go, "You know, you want it flat to the body?" And he goes, "Sure, why not?" I go, "I think that's probably best."
Why in the hell is this guy buying this guitar?
I know, I'm like, now he's the kind of guy, he went on my recommendation, truthfully, was to buy better guitars because he was playing like Mojotone and Firefly. And actually, he had a Lucky, what do they call them? Not Lucky Strikes or Lucky, what's that?
Hard Luck King. Yeah. Okay. All right. No matter what he could have bought, he's going to buy something better. So, yeah. All right.
But he's really tall. He's got hands that are like this big. I mean, he's like, you know, his hands are like this, where my hands are like this, right? I mean, and so I've never seen somebody that had the exact opposite problem I have. He has a problem where he puts his finger down and he's already hitting all six strings. Mm-hmm. It's like trying to teach Andre the Giant, how to play guitar. I mean,
that's
how big this guy is.
Yeah, I've played with a few people like that whose fingers are too big.
He doesn't use a pick, so he does this.
First things first, get him a Dorito chip.
Yeah.
Because that'll be comfortable in his hands, and then go from there.
Yep. I'm going to recommend to get some Santana picks, and he learns, because I said to him, I don't feel comfortable with a pick. I go, "Listen, man, you need to feel comfortable controlling your hand, because that's why you're out of rhythm, because you're not controlling the way your hand is flopping back and forth. It's like you have a rag in your hand. It's just, you're throwing it. The end of your fingers aren't good." I said, "You ever see a drummer, the way they hold a drumstick?" They're not at the end of the drumstick, but they know exactly where their thumb goes.
Yeah.
Right. And you have no precision. You're just whatever finger hits it first, that's the one you get. I said, so you're fanning out. It might be your middle finger, it might be your ring finger, it might be your pinky. You don't know. So yeah, it's not that he's a bad guy. He's a great guy. It's just he really needs to, and he does not wipe his freaking guitars off. I go, I'm wiping it down. I go, matter of shit is all of his strings.
Doritos.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think of. Like Cheetos.
That's funny. Pizza.
That's
pizza. That happened to me. It happened to me.
I'm telling you that this is the thing. This is the thing that I so I'm gonna open a little shop and do guitar repairs, and I'm afraid of these things that I'm going to discover on guitar. I'm afraid of what people do to their guitars.
Jim, this is what I was trying to tell you. You are not prepared for taking on other people's problems. You are not.
I am totally not. You are absolutely
right. If you wonder why when you go to your guitar tech, he has kind of an attitude issue. A lot of them I've met over my life have a little bit of an attitude issue. It's because they're tired of dealing with other people's problems.
Yeah. Yep. Well, you'll always get the person that insists, oh, I never did anything to this. The neck did not wind up doing this. Well, you didn't crank that truss rod, or they'll get the, well, I do my own maintenance and it's
my buddy did this.
Yeah.
The my buddy did this story.
Oh, that was the other. Oh, Jesus. So when I go in to do the screws.
Yeah.
I go, dude. These screws are practically stripped. And he goes, oh, yeah. And I don't want to call out the person, but it's a person that a lot of people take their stuff to around here. And he goes, oh, yeah, so-and-so had his hands in it. I go, I don't think so-and-so did that. This is not his work. And if it is, he's not getting anywhere near my guitars.
My guess is it probably wasn't so-and-so.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Was probably someone else.
Exactly.
Who backed the claw off and raised the bridge to high heaven, not realizing what they were doing.
That's right. That's right. Probably thinking that by giving them, because I hear it all the time. Oh, I want a little bit so it's easier for me to whammy. Yeah, but you got to be careful because if you give it too easy to whammy, your bridge.
You're better off losing a spring and tightening the claw.
Yep. Yep.
But
I told him,
oh, I want an easier whammy. And then the first time they actually use it, they're like, wait a minute. I bend up and now my whole bridge moves.
Yeah. That's why. Every time I tune up, it just keeps changing tuning. Yeah, of course it is. I told him, I said, I'm going to need to get a couple of springs for you. I'm just going to deck it. I'll just spring the shit out of it. Keep it straight. I said, but with the way that they have this, and they only have two springs, one of them's gone.
Where'd the other spring? Oh, that's what. Yeah. So somebody was dicking around in there. They didn't know what they were doing. That is not so and so from such and such guitar shop that did that.
Because I know the person, and I know good gosh darn well that all the people that I know take their guitars to him for repair. There's no way they would ever take their stuff back to him if he did what was inside there. No way.
Just don't.
And by the way, all the plastic is still on it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I still got plastic on a couple of my guitars. In fact, this red one that's up for sale right now still has the plastic on the back, cover. And I think some of the tuners still have the plastic on the back of them. So if you'd like to buy my junk, you can find my Reverb store in the Facebook group.
I'll be selling my junk. Here's a cavalcade of this.
Yeah, Jim's got
it's not junk. It's not junk.
Jim's going to be posting a Dark Side and a Keeley Caverns,
and this,
and a Seymour Duncan 805.
Yep. And for listeners only, if somebody says, hey, I listen to your podcast, I will give you a break.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we do the same thing. If you really want something from me, I'm more than likely going to give a podcast listener a break than anyone else. And specifically, if you're in the Patreon group, you're going to get a break for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not going to give people a break that because they're just an abuser. And I am very careful about where I put my stuff. So you have the serial numbers.
I don't give a shit. You're just going to get whatever's on the back of it.
Yeah. Now that. Yeah. This guy didn't, though. This guy. I bought this used, so I understand. If he even put this over this, I'm gonna exacto that off, though. Because look where he put it.
Right over the battery jack. Yeah, because he couldn't trim it an extra, you know, eighth of an inch.
Yeah, probably lost his exacto knife. He was probably looking for his Doritos.
No, he had to use it to cut his cocaine, so.
Well, if you met the guy, he was definitely cutting something in it. I'll tell you that.
All right.
But it's legal. It's legal in Virginia now, so whatever.
Cocaine?
It doesn't matter. No.
I was going to say, what?
I'm sure he was cutting his own
weed.
Don't you have to cut weed?
No, you don't cut that. You grind it. You don't cut it.
Yeah, I don't fucking know. You're talking to a person that's never even tried weed.
Yeah, I mean.
Never.
All right.
I have no clue.
All right. This is it, folks. This is it. If you like the episode, like and subscribe and hit the notification bell to get notified when we do other crappy things that you might want to see. And then join our Facebook group. There's stuff in the comments below. Read them. You have a good time. Buy our junk. You can find out about that in our Facebook group. I've been David.
I've been Jim.
And tonight, we have been practical guitarists.
Yes, we have.